Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Max Wagner. He will be talking to Tom Williams about his latest show, Playing at the Chopin Theater. We also have another audio review for you, and of course, Chicago's theater news. So, sit back and relax, and get ready to talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is Max Wagner, who is a theater producer, and he is producing a hot new show by a group called the Strange Tree Group. Hello, Max.
How you doing, Tom?
Great. Tell us about Emily Schwartz's new show.
Well, it's a love story.
tell us the wacky title.
The title is Mr. Spacky, the Man Who Is Continuously Followed by Wolves. It's playing at the Chopin Theater. Just opened this last night, May 31st, Thursday, and runs through Saturday, June 23rd.
Well, I've saw Emily's last two plays. Yeah, The Dastardly Ficus, and I believe the other one was the wedding, the funeral wedding.
The Alvin play.
And she really does some wacky off-the-wall stuff.
She has a very creative imagination. Everything that she does has some bit of wackiness to it, some bit of fantasy, some bit of element that trips your imagination.
She's kind of like the 21st century Addams Family type. I mean, there's a dark side to her humor.
You know, and she looks very sweet. She looks very nice. And she is sweet as pie, but she has a very morbid sense of humor. And that shows through in all of the scripts. It's singing and dancing about death and murder and things very macabre.
Yeah, so tell us about this show. I mean, I thought it was terrific. It is one of the most original pieces of theater you'd ever want to see.
I agree. And, doing a musical, I think there's so many elements to it. It's just not just the dialogue and the writing. It's the music, which is like that's a whole creative project in and of itself. And the music that she has, it's not only just background noise. It's not just a chorus. It helps move the story along. It helps tell parts of the stories.
Yeah, it's a classic musical. And she wrote the music and lyrics also, right?
Yes. You know, some of it's kind of a process where you work it out with the band. You know, she started off with a guitar and she'd play the songs for them, and you'd add a piece and then add another piece and then add another piece. And before you know it, you've got 7-8 pieces.
Yeah, and it's acoustical, guitar, banjo. Even had a washboard, I saw, an accordion.
You know, very folksy, very homey. The play is set in olden times, so I think the music matches that to a large degree.
So, as best you can, give us the basis of the story.
Well, essentially, Elizabeth Lyon meets George Dumont in a war-torn city some time ago. Again, we called it olden times. She is set to marry George to escape the war. And to join his family out in the country. His family, he sends her out ahead to prepare for the wedding that will be going on the next day in advance of him. Except George never really plans to show up. The family themselves, Miss Dumont and Edwina, his sister and her daughter, live in a small cottage out in the woods. And they have managed to subsist through this war by essentially trapping these poor girls that George sends out to the country.
And so this is all a con,
more or less,
to get naive Elizabeth into the country. Right?
Correct. The man who essentially executes all of these evil deeds is Mr. Spacky, the town minister, who is under the impression that he is followed by wolves that he cannot see continuously.
He's a terrific character. I mean, I believe it's Scott Cooper?
Cupper,
okay. I wasn't sure how to say that. Yeah, he plays him so wacky that you instantly love him. She always has a couple of wacky characters.
You know, she has a really good keen eye for comedy. Not only the wacky characters, but the straight characters to go with them. Miss Dumont is about as straight. Mrs. Dumont is about as straight can be.
Yeah,
her
I think
posture
I,
and her
yeah, I called her almost almost stiff, but purposely so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's the straight one that. Comedy always works off of somebody who's playing it straight.
Yeah, she's the Costello to his Abbott.
Right. So, all right, so you have this, you got this wacky minister, and he's in love with Agatha.
Mm-hmm, Mrs. Dumont.
Mrs. Dumont. And Mrs. Dumont is there to greet Elizabeth as the next victim, right?
Correct.
But things go a little haywire, don't they? And the daughter plays into it.
Yeah, you know, she's a funny character as well. It's a very, I think all the characters are somewhat, or some are somewhat relatable to all people. You know, they have elements. Mr. Spackey is, he's wacky, but he's also, and he's insane, but he's also lovesick. And he doesn't,
sure is.
He's a reluctant murderer. Miss Dumont is, you know, she's cold and she's a bit stiff, but she's also very protective of her situation.
She's also the ultimate survivor.
Exactly.
And the head of household.
Edwina is the strange, nerdy feeling that all of us have had at some point in our childhood. And, you know, all those characters have qualities that we can see in ourselves, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That, and when you blend this these goofy personas with terrific folk music,
mm-hmm.
that not only underscores, as you said, moves the story along and the, a lot of the musicians end up as players in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it where there's no fourth wall. There, many times everyone sort of speaks right to the audience.
That was a big priority for us in putting the band, everyone in the band is an actor who happens to play music, because all of them are, some of them have direct interactive parts, obviously, in the play. But just in general, people that had a sense for theater, that had a sense for storytelling. And it could be because they take the mantle at certain points within the play and tell the story and interact with the audience. And really, I think that's something where it was, as a producer, it was the scariest thing for me in finding people that had those type of talents, because I know they're few and far between. But I think we have a good group that's executing it fairly well.
Yeah, yeah, I think they're doing a good job with it. So now Elizabeth bonds with Edwina, right? Mm-hmm. Who's the daughter of the cold, stiff one who's
Elizabeth.
Who's determined. Yeah. All right, and they become friends, and there's mm-hmm. some really funny scenes there.
Yes, that's probably one of the funniest. That's what always gets me laughing. They're essentially Edwina is estranged because she is quite odd, and the local girls won't hang out with her. So she latches on to Elizabeth as someone that who she can dance with and play with and be a girl with. And in the course of their dancing and playing and dressing up, Elizabeth reveals that she's there to marry George, Agatha Dumont's brother, her uncle. And Edwina is obviously cognizant of what's been going on with all the young ladies who've been coming out to the country and coming to the cottage.
So she indirectly gives away the plot.
More or less.
Yeah. Okay. And then at a certain point, the band gets involved.
Mm-hmm. It's right at about that point where they decide what's to happen. Are they to stay and deal with the situation now that she's informed Elizabeth that she's to be done away with? Or do they just try to take flight? And that's where the band jumps in.
Yeah, and the band sings a cute number and, mm-hmm. and gets the audience involved. We actually end up with a choice. We vote on whether it's going to be a happy ending or a unhappy or sad.
The exceptionally cheerful ending and the terribly awful.
Okay, ending. That's the term.
It's something that I think, I love crowd interaction in any project that I do. And giving the crowd choice, Chicago's a pretty hard town. I know she's done it with other productions before. You'd be surprised. Not too many people pick the cheerful ending. People seem to like death and destruction and murder and things most foul.
There are the two endings, correct?
Yep. We've rehearsed all of them to death, really. Both of them involve their own completely unique set of lines, costumes, props, musical numbers, depending on what the audience chooses that night.
All right. On the opening night, the audience ended up choosing the terrible ending.
Mm-hmm. Terribly off.
Terribly awful, I want to get the term right, ending. And I thought it was cute, and I thought the whole process worked. Because, you know, it's been done before.
Yes.
Edmund Drood, you pick endings, and there were two or three stock endings on who ended up being the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
But here you get a choice of one or the other. And I think the dark side of the show got us to go for the awful ending.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I was hoping it would go the other way. So maybe I'll come back and see it.
Yeah,
and hopefully one night you guys will do the other ending.
And both of them are fairly over the top. I mean, when I say exceptionally cheerful, I mean it's exceptionally cheerful.
Okay.
Literally, it's dancing.
Well, folks, one of the marks of an Emily Schwartz play is nothing is done in moderation.
No.
It is it's purposely overdone to the point of exuding every bit of comic action you can get out of it.
Yeah. Right down to the characters are not just, you know, he's not Mr. Speck, he's not just insane. He's so completely insane that he thinks he's followed by animals everywhere he goes and kills people for love, and his insanity knows no bounds.
Yeah, this is one of those plays, folks, as when you go see it, and please do, just stay with it. Give it the first 5 or 6 minutes. Just, you know, no quick judgment. Just say, where is this thing going? And all of a sudden, you'll smile and you'll say, oh, that's where it's going. And if you tune into it, it will delight you. I mean, it's very well done. You got to be proud of the show.
I am. You know, and like with any project, you put in a lot of hard work. Everyone on the crew and the cast has worked extremely hard, lots of long hours. Because, you know, you see something, you get the script. It sounds like a great idea.
Give us some of the cast members
in
the show.
Jennifer Marchand plays Miss Elizabeth Lyon. She is the young lady who comes from the city.
She's the real ditzy one and funny, yeah.
Ditzy, frilly hat. She likes to attend parties. She's a socialite. She's born of money. She quickly becomes savvy to the situation and deals with it fairly well in both the happy and the terribly awful ending. Carol Enoch is Miss Agatha Dumont. She is the mother of the house.
I liked her a lot because she kept that stiff, frozen look all the way through, that tough look, which a lot of comedy just worked off of that.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. She plays the straight person to just about everybody in the play. Kara Klein does a great performance as Edwina.
She sure does.
Miss Agatha Dumont's daughter. Pretty much the person who it turns on when you go from the terribly awful to the terribly cheerful ending. She's the one that makes both of those go. Scott Cupper is Mr. Spackey, the namesake. Spackey.
I liked what he did because he had a tough role to do. I mean, he had to play not only the emotion, but he had to play the physical comedy of this really whacked out guy.
And he's got some really challenging singing parts.
Yes,
as well.
He does. Yes, he does.
Where he's on an island and he's pretty much carrying it all by himself, which is it's not something I'd ever do, but he does a great job of it.
Wow.
Mark Verne plays Thomas, who is essentially the leader of the band. The band is integrated into the show. They are all set as soldiers who have varying illnesses and amputations, and for whatever reason have ended up on Miss Agatha Dumont's doorstep, and she cares for them and feeds them, and in return they do her dirty business and, of course, play the tunes during the show. Les Cruz plays George Dumont, who actually never makes an appearance in the actual play.
That's right. We don't see him in the play. But the way she integrated the music into it, I think you could call this a murder mystery musical.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it's a musical all the way. I think we have 12 musical numbers in about an hour and 20 minutes. So I'd say it's almost as much music as it is dialogue, which is, I don't know what the standard is for.
No, that well that that way,
as a musical.
12 songs in an 80-minute show is ambitious music.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
And it's like a Stephen Sondheim type show.
And it's not where we're just packing songs in to have a song or singing something that doesn't necessarily.
No, it moves the story forward, which makes it a classic in the Rodgers and Hammerstein tradition of having each song, you know, tell a story. I just think the originality of the show, there is nothing like this. And I know in my review I was saying this is where energetic new voices come in. Not only from Emily Schwartz's point of view, but you guys, you as a producer, and the I think it's Carolyn Klein, the director.
Carolyn Klein.
Yeah, yes. I thought she did a terrific job, because this thing moves on. There's no wasted movement in the show, and you had a interesting set. It's a very busy kind of old fashioned set. And tell
rustic.
Tell us what you, with all the props, what you're doing with the props.
Well, there's a variety of different. We used to create the old cottage look. We used a lot of stuff we culled from the forest. Literally went out with a truck and pulled things out of the woods and integrated those into the set. We used old weathered wood to build the flooring and old techniques. There's this method of using wax to finish the flooring, which was apparently done around the turn of the century.
Yeah, because it does have that rustic look.
Yep, and we had we commissioned, I think it was 30 artists to do a variety of different pieces. A lot of outsider art folks to do crosses and the windows and the various elements of it that surround the shelves.
And you've got a lot of knickknacks and things on it.
Lots of knickknacks.
And you're doing something special with that, too.
Yep. All of the art that is integrated into the set is available for sale. There's a little bit.
At the end of the run or at the end of the night?
At the end of the run.
At the end of the run, okay. Mm-hmm.
You can, if you like something, you just let me know and you can pay. The prices are listed. You can just hand us a check, and we'll ship it to you as soon as the play is done. And there are things priced. There's one tea mug that's $8 that's handmade. There's a couple of things that are a few $100s. But everything's reasonably affordable.
Yeah, and I took a look at a lot of the stuff. It's got a it's like going to one of those garage sales. Mm-hmm. You never know what you're going to find, but most of it is original.
Sarah McMurray, the set designer, coordinated all of that, and she's very into outsider art. She's very into turn of the century kind of rustic Appalachia.
Yeah, I had
hominess.
That feel. Yeah, okay.
And with the cinder blocks and the old wood and all those different things, that's the element she grew up around.
So all of it's for sale.
All of it is for sale, definitely.
The tables, the chairs,
everything. Tables, the chairs, every single piece in it.
Well, that's cool. Maybe you'll be able to recoup some of your set design costs.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt. It certainly doesn't hurt. But more than anything, we want it to be an art piece. Everything in there was commissioned with an idea, and that really comes from Emily. She's very specific in all of her ideas, not just the lines, not just the script, but the costumes, every facet of the costumes and every facet of the set, the colors.
The costumes were unique, and the faces, the makeup. Most of the musicians had white faces, and they had kind of a little bit of a, like they came out of the grave sort of look about them. Zombie, I guess you'd call
it. It's not so, I imagine them having somewhat of a leprosy issue, okay. Band members, just because of, gangrene, leprosy, a sickly look that you get after being in war.
Well, I think it's a terrific show, and it's starting off the summer. The warm season. I think you're going to have a hit on your hands. I really do.
Thank you.
But one of the other things I want to talk, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on as an interview is we rarely get a chance to talk to a producer, particularly from what I'll call a storefront, a young startup theater group. As you know, I cover a lot of them because I think that's where the energy and that's where the real, that's where the next Steppenwolf's are coming from. Not only the house theater, but I think you guys are right behind them. You're right there. But unfortunately, I go many times to shows, even on opening nights, where there's like five people there and four of them are critics, or there are 10 people there. So tell us about, as a producer, some of the marketing things that you think you need to do that, and that you have done. Like, I'll tell you one thing, sending me the complete press kit in the mail, I know that that's a little bit of an expense.
Sure.
That was not only impressed me, but I had a chance to read over everything, even though I get a lot of them on the internet. There's something about it when it's in your hand. So that little thing alone, I'm sure got a few of us to come out where we might have otherwise not have seen your show.
Well, it's all about, for me, I come from an events background. I'm a professional event producer. So just in general, I like to have a full house. I think it's a great play, and I want as many people to see it as possible. That alone is drive enough for me to make the effort to try and get people out. And I think it's a shame if you have a great script and you have a great set and you have actors that have put all their time into this and you don't try your best to get folks to come and see it, because it's not that it's not an important piece. It's just you want to spread the wealth. You want everybody to be able to see this great thing that you've created. And, you know, professionally, in terms of how I deal with people, you know, I'm very organized, very deadline driven, really. That I look at myself as the bridge between creative people and what they do. I ask them what they need and what I can do to make it happen. And then I make the schedules work. I make the budgets work. I make things come together. I'm more of a facilitator than a creator.
And too many small theater groups don't really have someone who takes your point of view as a producer. I know all the major shows.
Yeah, sure.
I once read where Cole Porter, they said to him about what's the role of the producer. He's the one that's always right because he's the guy with the money.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm that guy, but I'm also the guy that if, you know, somebody needs called, I make the call. If something needs hammered and nailed together, I'll hammer and nail it together. I do whatever needs done. At the time that it needs done. And also, you know, being a professional and working with events and promotion and things like that.
Yeah, tell us a little about your background in that.
I do festivals and conferences and trade shows and parades and pretty much anything where people come and have a good time, I've done it.
And you do what? You organize it or you get the talent for it? Or?
Usually organizing it, producing it, which means kind of overseeing all elements, sales, production, operations, light, sound, security, you name it. At some point, I've had responsibility over it, which, again, I think it's like you said, there's a lot of nonprofit theater groups that could use somebody with that type of experience. And I think that's why they asked me to become involved in the group in the first place.
Oh, so you knew these? Do you know Emily and the people?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And, you know, I'm not classically trained in the theater. I've never held aspirations to be an actor.
Well, that's probably to your benefit. I mean, really, because you can look at it from an event point of view.
I come in with a fresh perspective. I don't have any agendas in terms of the sets, you know, as far as what I think looks good. I don't have any. I ask the set designer what they want to get done. I tell them what the budget is, and I try and think of creative ways to get it done. Where instead of trying to dictate to them, no, this is what you're going to do, or I'm paying the money here, so this is what I want. I've run a record label. I've run a music magazine. At every point, it's putting creative people in a position to succeed. And if you have that at top of mind all the time.
And they're not the easiest to deal with. Sometimes the egos get in the way, right?
Someone once told me that every play is a drama. At least, you know.
Yeah.
I've related it, you know, especially with like it's mostly a female group that I deal with. It's often like, it's like I'm dad and dating six women all at once. You know, even the people that are generally having a good time or work, because you have to communicate. And that's the biggest thing. The role is communicating to people, communicating to the press, communicating with the theater, communicating to our contractors and our vendors, communicating with the cast and the director and the stage manager and the technical director and all these people, and making them feel, you know, keeping them motivated, making them feel like they're doing a good job, giving them what they need to succeed.
Well, I can tell you this, that you've done a good job so far. I mean, like I said, opening night, it was packed.
Yeah, and
that's rare on the storefront theaters.
And that's
really
something we worked at as well. And you know, Emily's she's got a following that's growing.
Oh, yeah.
People have seen her plays; they like her sense of humor. They like the pacing. You know, to me as a producer, what you were saying about the show, in that it was the pacing is I love it when somebody when I don't see anyone looking at their watch. When everybody gets to the end and they kind of stare at their watch after the walk and are like, oh, wow, that was an hour and 20 minutes. It didn't even say it seemed like 45 minutes.
Right.
You know, that means you were being entertained.
That's
true. You start looking at the clock when things get
dull. Well, that's one of the reasons we go to theater for, is to escape from this crazy world we live in and to be entertained and challenged and made laugh or cry or whatever the story is. And I mean, the belly laughs were pretty strong.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a funny lady if you hang out with her. And I bet if you could just, it's tape a tape recorder to her arm, you'd have a Mr. Spacky type play every two weeks.
She is a product of the product.
Huh? Yeah, she definitely is. It's not. So I think it's obviously something she labors over heavily, but at the same time, I think it's something that comes somewhat natural to her.
I think she's a major talent. I really do. I think the upside of her future is going to be really strong.
And like I said, I'm not necessarily what people would call a theater guy. But I got involved because I know she's got talent. And I read the thing and I laughed. You know, just reading it on white paper, I laughed. And that's something always a script comes across.
Scripts don't always laugh. Sometimes they have to be played out with a gesture or certainly the tones and so forth make a difference. But on paper, it got you to laugh.
Definitely.
That's a good sign.
That's a very good sign for me. And, you know, I read it to a few people. We had some people over at readings that come from different backgrounds. I brought my 16-year-old cousin. I brought my aunt, who's a 47-year-old suburban housewife, just to, like, listen to it. And we walked out and give me your honest opinion. They liked it. And that's something that, you know, it's not... I guess it's not as formalized as market research, but...
Well, it's a type of market research,
it's something where, you know, I want to know what those people's reaction are. I want to know what everybody's reaction are.
Well, I do that, too, when I go to shows. I definitely like to read the reaction of the audience.
Sure.
And unfortunately, sometimes I go to shows where friends of the cast, they're over-laughing, you know, and they're laughing at places that aren't funny. They're like trying to influence. That just irritates us. Don't do that, folks.
It's
laugh when you want to laugh.
It's a tough line. I mean, we had a good balance of people there in terms of the press, in terms of our friends, and in terms of
there was no false laughter.
And just people who bought tickets,
yeah.
Which is a good sign as well. But there's it's not quite, a machine gun of laughs, but it's... There's a lot of things to laugh at, and you don't ever get too far away from the comedy. At the same time, it's not just slapstick where the story is.
No, there's a story. It's funny. Music is good. It's clever. All right, in the interest of time,
sure.
Give us a commercial for the show, the name and where it's at and how much the tickets are and so forth.
It is, opened last night, May 31st on Thursday at the Chopin Theater at 1543 West Division Street, which is at the convergence of Division, Ashland, and Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, right off the Blue Line. Four blocks west of the Kennedy Expressway, there is free parking at the Holy Trinity Church, which is at Noble and Division, about two blocks west of the Expressway, two blocks east of the theater. And it runs through the 23rd. Tickets are $20. They are available...
What days do you run?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We run at 8 p.m. On Sundays, we run at 5. And tickets can be bought for all performances by going to either www.strangetree.org or calling 773-489-4773. And to be honest with you, online we only sell out about two-thirds of house. We hold about a third for walk-ups every night because I do like people to be able to just decide the last minute, hey, let's go see a fun play and be able to get in.
Well, that's good. That's good, dear. But you still would rather have them, you know, call in, right?
Well, that's always great.
I mean,
money up front.
And it's always nice to know, be able to predict.
Yeah, it's nice to walk into the house knowing you've got a sellout. That's something I always enjoy, and it always brings a smile to people's face when they know they're going to have a packed house to perform in front of.
Well, I wish more theater groups would get producers like yourself involved. Obviously, you like the project.
Yeah, and you know, it's it's I don't take on a lot of projects. It's been a few years since I did one, but you know, when you believe in the people and you believe in the script and you believe that you can do it, I just kept trying of thinking of reasons not to do it, and I couldn't think of one. And then I started thinking about the potential of what it could be and how good the show could be, and how unique a thing it could be, you know, to do. And
you should get the people from
myself.
From Steppenwolf there, I'll tell you why. They have a film division, and they're getting involved with HBO and Showtime. With
I've heard that.
Yeah, and Emily's type stuff could be one of those, like the Craig Wright, wacky comedy. I could see this stuff on Showtime or HBO.
She's got the talent. She could go in any direction. Yeah. She could write horror movies. She could write comedies. She could write... Broadway musicals. She could write pretty much anything she wants to, and it would come off solidly.
Well, folks, I can't recommend this show enough. It's fun. It's a great date night show. It's very cute, and it's a clean show too.
Yeah, even though there's murder involved, you know.
But I mean, it's obvious. It's wink,
murder.
Wink. Yeah, and everyone knows that it's not taking itself too serious.
No,
and it's
not.
You know, sexy or foul mouth, so you can bring the kids there. It's I won't say wholesome entertainment. I'd say wacky entertainment.
Yeah, it's fun, but it's, you know, it's something where a number of the people in the cast are bringing their children to see it. You know, obviously, I think somebody like under five would probably have trouble with any theater. But
yes,
you know,
we don't recommend that. They get noisy.
Somebody likes, you know, and I think it's something that really brings young people into theater these days. Musicals seem to be really popular among high yes. school age kids, and you know,
right, and the whole folksy acoustical mm-hmm. non-electric guitar thing is in now. People are tired of those things where they just blow you
it's
can't
a little
hear.
Bit more organic. It's yeah. something a little bit more easy to relate to, I think.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're having fun.
Yeah, yeah. Nonstop.
Great. Well, that's good. And have, you know, you're only the second producer we've had on, and I'm glad to see that somebody who's passionate is helping theater work in this town, because we need more good producers.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor.
Thank you. And folks, remember, go see a play this week.
Chicago, and welcome to another engaging episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you Chicago's theater news for the week of June 4th, 2007. Mary Zimmerman's Mirror of the Invisible World will be concluding artistic director Robert Fall's 20th anniversary season at the Goodman Theater. Mirror of the Invisible World was adapted by Mary Zimmerman from a 12th century Persian epic known as the Haft Pekar. Mary Zimmerman, who is the Manilow resident director at the Goodman, will also be directing the show as well. At the heart of this epic are seven romantic, adventurous, and funny stories about seven princesses from China, Greece, Turkey, Africa, India, Persia, and Russia. The king, over the course of seven nights, weds each princess and listens as they impart a legend about love. The show opens on June 23rd and runs through July 29th. Tickets are currently available at the Goodman Theater box office. For more information, don't forget to click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Black Ensemble celebrates those sensuous, seductive 70s, a sizzling new musical revue following on the successful heels of those sensational, soulful 60s. Those Sensuous Seductive 70s was written, produced, and directed by Black Ensemble Theater founder and artistic director Jackie Taylor. The show opened yesterday, June 3rd, and runs for 12 weeks until August 26th at the Black Ensemble Theater. It will be included in repertory with the company's currently running smash hit, Memphis Soul. Those Sensuous Seductive 70s will include 1970s hit songs from artists such as Marvin Gaye, Donna Summers, Minnie Riperton, The Jackson 5, and Diana Ross, amongst others. For more information on how you can get tickets to see those Sensuous Seductive 70s or the popular open run of Memphis Soul, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. BroadwayWorld.com is reporting that the new Broadway-bound musical Shrek will be holding auditions here in Chicago on Monday, June 11th. Auditions will take place starting on 10 a.m. at the Lou Conti Dance Studio, and they are going to be looking for not only ensemble members, but lead roles as well. The book and the lyrics for the new musical were done by David Lindsay Abair, and the show is being directed by Jason Moore. Stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News podcast for more information as the musical gets closer. This upcoming weekend is a big one for theater awards all around the nation, not just here in Chicago. The 61st Annual Tony Awards will be airing on Sunday, June 10th at 7 o'clock on CBS. And on the next day, Sunday, June 11th, will be the Jeff Citation Awards that will be held at the Park West in Chicago. So make sure you stay tuned right here to the Theater News Podcast so you can hear the Tony Award and Jeff Citation Award winners. Well, thank you for listening to this engaging episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare quote of the week. The following quote comes from As You Like It, Act 1, Scene 2. Your heart's desires be with you. Well, we can't thank you enough for listening to our podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready to stick in your ears. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it. You are listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast, Hide in Hollywood by Peter Parnell, directed by Andrea Diamond, and produced by Shattered Globe Theater at Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater. Review by Tom Williams. Shattered Globe, a fine equity theater troupe, has another ambitious and engaging play at Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater, Hide in Hollywood. Once I got what director Andrea Diamond and playwright Peter Parnell were up to, Hyde began to work for me. This is a play about 1930s Hollywood, and it is purposely overplayed, much like they did in films of that era. The dialogue is full of hyperbole, the characters overact and scream to show emotions, and the characters are archetypes found in B-movies. This is the intent. It works to both exemplify and poke fun at the style of filmmaking in the 1930s. Hyde is part thriller, part ode to films, and part satirical cautionary tale. Despite a tad too much shouting from the cast, Hyde is an engaging and tightly produced show that is a showcase for Steve Kaye, who plays the role of Julian Hyde, and the mesmerizing Brian McCaskill, who plays the role of Hollywood Confidential. This is an epic play that captures and utilizes 1930s filmmaking techniques on the stage. This worked for me, and the old-time style, that having the characters overplay everything, is a device that underscores the storyline. There are all the stock techniques from drunken confessions, to fistfights, to tender love scenes, to a climactic fight on a platform high above leading to a literal fall. This mirroring delivers a built-in homage and satire toward Hollywood personas. Set in 1939, the play finds Julian Hyde, a prolific and famous film, actor, director, involved in a scandal that finds his wife murdered and his private sex life under scrutiny by a gossip columnist called Hollywood Confidential. Hollywood Confidential is determined to expose Tinseltown's leading personality's dark secrets. Hollywood Confidential views his role as a guardian of American morals as he champions family, God, and country in fascist-style nastiness reminiscent of Rush Limbaugh today or Walter Winchell from the 1930s and the 1950s. Julian Hyde lets himself be blackmailed by Hollywood Confidential in a vain attempt to hide his homosexuality. This leads to an epic battle between Hyde and Hollywood Confidential where the glitz of film and film stars versus the famous, self-appointed voices of the people. The play focuses on filmmaking with reference to many screen idols. It has funny moments and features a melodramatic prima donna type character. The play is essentially a sketch of inside Hollywood's secrets and our fascination with a celebrity gossip. Hollywood Confidential is a tortured soul filled with violent rages in his pursuit of a moral crusade. Brian McCaskill is riveting here as he goes from a fast-talking reporter to a psychopath who believes America is ripe with deception by the media and PR advocates. Steve Kaye anchors the play with his stiff, yet measured, complex Julian Hyde. Kaye brings out Hyde's passion to create worthy art in his films. He believes films can help communicate to the public. Kaye portrays Julian's temper and determination effectively. Hyde is an ambitious work that features smart use of new film footage that moves the story along with excellent visuals. Hyde in Hollywood is for film nerds and those who enjoy well-acted theater. I give this a recommended rating. Hyde in Hollywood by Peter Parnell, directed by Andrea Diamond and produced by Shattered Globe Theater at Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater.
located at 2257 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago, Illinois, now through July 7th. For tickets and more information, please call 773-871-3000.
Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Max Wagner for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Mote, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.